Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day, call for help. We were guides, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time, number nine.
Friday, we began the show discussing the faint heartbeat getting stronger for the Houston Astros. And Friday, at least Friday night, you felt it a little stronger. You were now within 5 games of the division leading Mariners. You got a win. Ronald Blanco was not elite, but he was good. And you felt pretty good about yourselves. And then the weekend happened. If you don't consider Friday the official start of the weekend, which some of us do, then at least Saturday and Sunday happened. And now, I don't know if it's flatlined because it's May, but all that positivity out the door, because the live, die, repeat stuff with the Astros came back. And that, well, we should expect it if it's live, die, repeat with another bullpen disaster. Thanks to Brian Abreu and Josh Hader. You had what happened on Saturday, where the Astros turned a relatively average pitcher into an untouchable. So certainly Friday started off well. You win that one, you feel pretty good. But the next 2 days, just more of the same. And now you're 7 games back or at least after a weekend where you thought you could make some real ground up. Now, you win 2 out of 3. You're only gaining a game. But, hey, you start off with the win on Friday. Then you think you got a real shot to go get you another 2 and maybe sweep the Mariners, but that was the case. Couldn't hit on Saturday, and then your bullpen blew it on Sunday. So it was a rough weekend, and the nicknames continue. If you are someone who's targeting Alex Bregman, Mr. Pop-Up, that name, I guess, is going to stick until he proves that that's not who he is, but that has been him. You know, sometimes you say he's him, and that's a good thing for Bregman right now. Mr. Pop-Up, that's him, and it's not great. It's bad. I don't know. People talk about vibes, and maybe because he knows he's not going to be here, and that's affecting him. I don't know. I just know it's not great. And all of a sudden, John Singleton has surpassed him as a more dependable hitter, which should speak to where Bregman is. I mean, Brian McTaggart put up the numbers. I'll give them to you a little bit later, but Singleton's been good. And not just like relatively speaking, like compared to some of the outs, that the clear outs that you see across this lineup right now, but actually he's become a good, it's a real stretch for me when I'm talking about Singleton, but he's been better than anyone could have imagined. Over the last 55 at bats, he's been a competent hitter, which is not something we would have said about him beforehand. I'm sure it's still some feast and famine stuff. If he's not hitting a home run, he'll go in his other bats 0-for-4 and look awful. But what else can you say about him other than he's exceeded the expectations put on him, particularly when we just assumed he'd be a pinch hitter and a backup first baseman for Abreu when he needed a day off. But that's not been the case. We're leaning on John Singleton, and to be fair to him, he is not disappointed, and it's very hard. It would have been very hard for him to disappoint considering his expectations. But if we're going to look for bright spots, which is not something I really want to do early in May for the Astros, he would fit the profile. We know the story, but the fact that he's now become a player who you just can't write off is a credit to him, because at least earlier this season, he was one of those guys. In his last 55 plate appearances. And now this is a tweet by Brian McTaggart. He's got an OPS over. Oh, his OPS is 764 for the season. Not spectacular, but once again, we're talking about John Singleton. His slash numbers are 292, 364, and 521 with three homers and eight RBIs. That's over his last 55 plate appearances. So if we're talking about guys who have carried their weight, it's Singleton. And now then you can get into the rest of the lineup and go, not you, not you, not you. But he doesn't fall in that category. But the point remains, the Astros are now seven games out. And you have to wonder, considering what Todd Callis said, are the fans right? And we'll play the sound. Todd Callis was on with the Killer Bees, I believe, on Friday. And now he said this before the weekend series, and he probably felt pretty good about what he said after Friday night. But he said something about the fans and to the fans about where they should be if they've already jumped off the bandwagon. So we'll play that in a little bit. But I don't know. I don't hear that particular segment every week. I didn't know Todd Callis had that in him. I didn't know the play-by-play guy for the Astros, who, you know, Todd Callis is excitable, but he's not really ever, I've never heard him take a shot at the fans, and he has had no reason to, because generally this team's been really good, and really since he's been here the team's been good and competitive, so the fans aren't jumping off the bandwagon. But has Todd Callis had enough? We've heard him during the games maybe get a little agitated about the team, but it was the wave, actually, is what got him upset.
It was actually the wave. He has taken shots at the fans before.
Yes.
When they stand up in a
when they're not supposed
rhythmic
to.
Fashion. Yes.
Over something that has nothing to do with baseball. He takes issue with them. So I'll pull back what I said. He has taken issue with the fans, but never over their support of the team, just their actions in Minute Maid Park. He's not. Don't do the wave around Todd Callis.
Don't behave like that.
Yeah, real fans don't behave like that, apparently. And now, if you have turned on your Astros, he has thoughts about that, and we'll get to that. And you know what? You just hear the little things surrounding the team, whether it be by Todd Callis or others. There's frustration building, and the fans are right to be frustrated. Whether they should be berating and trashing players online, that's up to. For debate. I don't tell you how to be a fan. It's, you know, I'm not a person who uses social media that much, so I wouldn't be doing that. Anyway, I wouldn't be mentioning guys and how bad they are. Hell, I have a job that does that, so I guess that's my outlet if I so choose. But yeah, Todd Callis, not thrilled with you guys if you have turned on your team, and we'll hear from him when we come back. But I think you're kind of right to be if you have turned on them. It is May, but they've played poorly, and the guys you expect to be great aren't. And we've talked about it, well, throughout the season so far, and really leading up to it. The strength of this team was supposed to be the lineup and the back half of that bullpen, the 7, 8, 9. Maybe they were Dotel, Lidge, and Wagner level. They have not been that. 8 blown saves so far for the Astros, and another one thanks to Abreu. And then you know, Hader gave up a home run where he just left the ball over the middle. I mean, that's kind of what he said. Sure, I could have picked a different pitch, but I didn't execute that pitch, so who says I wouldn't have executed the other pitch if I had chosen one? It was easily hittable. So just hit hard into the Crawford boxes, and that sucked the emotion out of the building if Abreu not getting it done in the inning earlier hadn't done it. So the Astros go down 5-4. Another close one. The stats, I mean, I could read any stats you want, and when you're as bad as they are, none of them are going to make you feel good. But they're off one-run games, too. If the 8 blown saves wasn't enough to depress you, if you had high expectations, the fact that they are a team who can't get it done in one-run games should bother you, I guess, too. I mean, this has been a trend. In 2022, they're 28-16. You know, the World Series year. They were one of the best teams in baseball when it came to one-run games. It got worse last year, 20-21, and now this year they're 1-9. Is that because of a leak in leadership? That's been a discussion about the team. They continue to lose guys who are leaders on the team and maybe more vocal than, say, some of your quiet lead-by-example guys, and that's affecting their ability to win games late. That in baseball is always something I can't put a number or a percentage on about how much losing a guy who's a leader means, because it's in some cases a very individual sport. Is the fact that Carlos Correa isn't there the reason why a guy doesn't hit in the clutch, or why a pitcher can't get an out when it matters late in the game? I don't know. We know we know Carlos got after Fromber, and when Fromber was struggling in a particular game, and everyone points to that, and some people sarcastically do, maybe some guy who works here, when it comes to
the mound visit.
Yeah, the mound visits by Carlos. Well, we know people pointed to that as a moment where Carlos Correa showed his great leadership. I don't know if that means anything when it's a 2-2 count in the bottom of the eighth and you need Bregman to come through. Does Carlos not being around glaring at Bregman mean anything? I don't know.
Bregman can't look to the dugout because normally Correa hit after Bregman, and he looks to the dugout and he sees Carlos Correa with his arms folded. And
looking at him crossly.
Yeah, you know what? I got to get underneath this one. I can't pop this one up.
Yeah, or not get underneath it.
Oh, yeah. I got to get on top of this.
Yes, he's used to getting underneath it. That's been his thing all year long. Yeah, so I don't know. Maldi staring at you, making sure you're hyped up for the bat. What does that mean when you're facing a pitcher when you're overmatched? I can't put a number on it. I just know that people will point to things like that and say, hey, the Astros lack leadership. They're not clutch anymore. And part of that has to do with some of the leakage when it comes to guys leaving the organization. Or at some point the run has to come to an end. You can't be clutch all the time. And maybe it's as simple as that. It was 7 years of greatness. At some point, it's got to come to an end. And maybe this is it. Hopefully, it's not. But we talk about runs. The fact that the Astros have been good this long is an outlier. Who does this anymore? Who goes to that many ALCSs in a row? It doesn't happen. The fact that they've done this for the better part of a decade speaks to the greatness and maybe alerts you that it's just about to come to an end. And it has to at some point. There has to be a refresh. And unfortunately, it's coming maybe a little bit more harshly. The decline is more harsh than we expected. No one expected this team to be this bad. And maybe we contend. Maybe we don't make the playoffs, but we're in it to the end. And that's certainly something that could be the case. But where they are now, I think it's a big slap across the face for people as far as reality is concerned and thinking, hey, nothing lasts forever. And right now the Astros are at least alerting us to, at this point, don't expect to turn around. Be happy about it if it occurs, but maybe just don't believe because of the back of the baseball card that it will happen. And that's where we are right now. We're going to hear from Todd Callis, mostly because I think it's funny that he pretty much said keep that same energy to the fans before a series where all the things that they would complain about happened again. But hey, he's seen this team perform, and so have we. And maybe it's going to take a little longer for Todd Callis to come to a potential conclusion that, hey, maybe it's not this year that we can look for an Astros big run. But you know what? It's only May. So if you want to keep the lie alive right now, if that's where you're at, more power to you, because what else do we have to look forward to other than Texans mini camp? And I guess Rockets free agency and draft. So we'll continue to talk about the Astros. We'll talk about some of the other things that happened over the weekend as well. It was a big weekend for a particular player, particularly anyone who thinks they found the next Michael. Did that happen over the weekend? I'm not sure, but Anthony Edwards had a big night in Denver as the Wolves take game one of a series where they're not the favorite. But if game one's any indication, we shouldn't look past them. We'll get to some other NBA stuff, too. We'll hear from some stuff from the Tom Brady roast. I didn't watch it live. At this point, why watch anything live when it comes to that? The clips are going to be out minutes later on Twitter, so we'll probably get to some of that, too. We're just one segment in. We'll be back.
ESPN 97.5.
Kane is in the building.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Welcome back. Let's get to that Todd Callis thing. It's quick. He was on with the Killer Bees. He tries to be on every Friday. You know, scheduling conflicts can happen, and times will move around. But Todd Callis was on the Killer Bees on Friday discussing this rough start to the season. And really, if you're a fan who's jumped off the bandwagon, keep that same energy.
The last I saw, Fangraphs had them at a 45% chance to make the playoffs. So I'm okay if people want to jump off the bandwagon, as long as you don't jump back on when things go well. I really appreciate the true diehard fans that stay with this team during the tough times. We've had 7 years of amazing, incredible accomplishments to give up on this team that quickly.
Jim Crane's like, hey, those tickets still sell to bandwagon jumpers. Watch it.
Their money's still green.
Yeah, that money's great. I got nachos to sell. What are we talking about, Todd? I appreciate your passion, but the fans want to come back. They can come back. Let them do the wave too. As long as they paid for those seats. Todd Callis, he's talking to y'all.
Yeah.
Watch yourselves. Don't come back when they turn it around.
I know you're all on Fangraphs checking their playoff percentage.
And let's look at what Fangraphs thinks now after they lost two or three to the Mariners. That was Friday before the series began. Checking Fangraphs, huh? Now you know you're in a bit of trouble when Todd Callis is checking Fangraphs. Hey, it's at 45%. When's the last time that was a thing for the Astros, that we're checking Fangraphs and their percentage to make the playoffs in May? That hasn't been a thing, because the expectation was they're going to make the playoffs. Now it's like, well, the percentages say we still got a really good shot. Come on, man.
When's the last time it's been 45%?
Yeah, that low. Yeah.
Like, because it starts with, like, the projection. So.
And the projection was, even if you think they're not winning the AL West, we had this discussion there about before the season. We had all these experts from ESPN, like, who's going to make the World Series? Who's going to win the AL? And I think the Astros had the lowest amount of votes for winning their division, but they were still expected to win the division. So it couldn't have been at 45%. I think Fangraphs would have had them at a higher percentage. But when you start off the way they have, it'll drop. But look, I get it. He wants the fans to stay loyal, but even you know, because you're checking Fangraphs, you know it ain't rosy, 45%. But hey, man, 45. Don't do the wave.
Almost a coin flip.
Don't. It's coin is spoken, possibly. Maybe it spoke over the weekend.
Oof.
Maybe the coin spoke over the weekend.
It's spoken, and the coin got a little harder for the Astros. 39.4%.
Losing two out of three. Now it's 39.4%?
Four.
All right. So almost 6% after losing two out of three and losing one game off the lead. Well, I guess if he comes back on – we'll see where they are on Friday when he makes his next appearance. We'll see what he has to say about the bandwagon going forward. But, guys – just know, the play-by-play announcer for your Houston Astros still thinks they have a chance.
Hey, and be careful what you tweet. He's making a list.
checking it twice or thrice.
Not Santa.
I said or thrice.
Yeah. Oh, so he works harder than Santa. You know what? He does work harder.
Yeah, Santa's like he's got slave labor, and he works one day a year. Now it's like a 24-hour thing because it's, you know, traveling
but
the world.
Still one day
it's still
a year.
One day a year.
That's like, well, now it's like 8 baseball games. Used to be like 3.
It's true. It's true. baseball has shortened their games to some people believe to its benefit. If you are the MLBPA, you think it's to the detriment of your pitchers. Next time we'll see the Astros after their day off. They're going to face the Yankees. The Yankees with Verlander on the mound. The Yankees who started all this crap. Like, the Yankees came to the town. Hey, we own the Yankees. This will be great. And then the Yankees came in and swept them. And it's been trash ever since. So I don't know if this is a full circle moment. They go into Yankee Stadium and go take that series from them, and then it starts to run. Well, yeah, I'm stretching. I'm reaching for stuff. I'm aware. I'm just looking for any way to say, hey, things will get better. And you know what? Verlander on a Tuesday against Gill, maybe it will be. So the Astros will have just Verlander to stop a 2-game losing streak. And maybe they get things going, but we're probably going to do this into June. Guess about things turning around just because I got a good pitcher's on the mound for the Astros.
I think, well, it depends. It depends how the run, if there is a run in May, takes place. Because even if they just play like 500 ball or like slightly above 500 ball, I think you could still talk yourself into, like, well, they're still hanging around. If they keep playing like they're, what, 12-24, whatever the record is, that's when it gets tough. That's when they are consistently pulling out, like, three out of seven, like three, or not 3-7 over the 10-game stretch, where it's like, ugh, there's really no chance you turn this around. But if they can slowly, they can at least, you know, keep the bandwagon full for a little while.
You're talking about winning like four out of six, although they didn't. That stopped over the weekend. They're 5-5 in the last 10, 12-22, 7 games back. The numbers are tough as far as how many games they have to win and how consistently they have to win. Clearly, they have to prove that they're not the team we've seen for the first 34 games. They have to play out a clip that doesn't necessarily match this, but clearly, they got to clearly outplay what they have been.
They need like a 15-3.
They need to rip off
stretch.
They need to rip off a giant stretch and then come back and have some regression where they're still in the race. But they have this 15-3 stretch under their belt, which kind of brings them back in it. They need a big time run. And do we see that in them? The starting pitching. Now that they're getting healthier, gives them an opportunity. I mean, less Hunter Brown would help. I mean, whenever Javier's back, probably means we're done with Hunter Brown. That would be great. And Urquidy.
I was thinking Urquidy.
Yeah,
too.
Javier. Yeah. When Javier comes back, we're probably going to see less of Hunter Brown. I guess Urquidy will become your quote unquote fifth starter. And then I guess when another guy comes back, whether it be Urquidy or someone else, I mean, I saw McCullers discussing how he's going to ramp up some of his rehab. So I mean, we're still probably thinking July. Maybe for McCullers. But so health for your pitching staff continues to come and it'll get better. And then eventually you can start to now point directly at your 7, 8, 9 guys and the weak spots in your lineup. So I like Jim Bowden, we might play a little bit later. He talked about how the Astros can't win games when those other guys are pitching. Now, this was before the weekend. Those other guys include Hindley and Urquidy and Brown and France. And we've given you those numbers about how good the starters that we expected to be in the rotation have been. But it's more than that. Yeah, I mean, sure, those injury replacement guys are not great, but that's no excuse for 7, 8, 9 and what they've done. And we just saw that yesterday where you were in a spot where you were going to win that game. And then your 8, 9 guys decided, nah, we're not interested in winning a game here. We're gonna give up runs because that's what we do this year. We're going to disappoint consistently because this is who we are, and it happened again.
Yeah, that to me is the this team's not gonna do anything if those guys aren't good, because that's the whole theory of this team. It's like, yeah, the bullpen isn't deep, but you get the good starting rotation or the good pitchers in that starting rotation to get you to Abreu, Presley, and Hader, and boom, game's over. And then when Abreu really hasn't found it at all this year, Josh Hader hasn't found it at all this year, can't get out of an inning clean, you're just not going to win games.
No.
Like, it's just not going to happen if those guys, more so, I think, than any individual hitter, than like Alex Bregman or when Jose Abreu was here, the back end of the bullpen is now I won't say the reason they're in this mess, but it's the reason this mess will continue until they play better.
Yeah, the 8 blown saves, the awful record in one run games, 1-9.
Yeah.
A lot of that has to do with 7, 8, 9, because even if you were average in one run games, some of it has to do with not hitting, not being clutch. It all plays a part. But if you have been able to find a way to just be
5-5 in one run of games,
yeah, you would feel a lot better about this team, and you would still be disappointed.
You'd be
because
16-17.
Yeah, you'd be below average, but you wouldn't be so far out of the race where we're having people, depending on the show or depending on the media outlet, put a tombstone and have the Astros season on it already in the month of April and now May. So yeah, I mean, Sean, you hit it on the head. You can't expect this team to turn it around unless your guy 7, 8, 9 turn it around, and then they haven't shown that they can do that consistently. And until they do, we're going to have these conversations and then articles written about, well, if I would have thrown a curve instead of this, it's all about my execution. Well, execute. I mean, look, you know what they say, don't tell me how big the waves are, bring the ship in, Hater. I don't care. I don't really particularly care how you get it done at this point, just get it done. And those opportunities to get it done he's had plenty, He just hasn't found a way to do it. And whether it be closing a game or coming in the ninth to hold it down and give your team a chance to take a lead and win, there have been failures in all aspects. And until that changes, like you said, we're in for a long, long season. I mean, it has nothing to do with this city, but there were people performing over the weekend, namely a couple cards in Donovan Mitchell and Anthony Edwards. So we'll talk a little bit about the playoffs, what happened over the weekend. And I am a little tired already of the "is he Jordan" stuff. I mean, he's been great for five games in a playoff run. Let's relax. But he has been one of the stars of the playoffs so far. And then Donovan Mitchell has tried to join him as he got the Magic out of here. And the Cavs are now on to the second round where they'll see those Boston Celtics. And Donovan Mitchell did something pretty funny at the end of that game. We'll talk about that when we come back.
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Sean, have you ever chanted, we want insert name of team or city before? Have you ever done that? Like you've been a tech, we want USC back when Texas was beating up on, what, Colorado in the Big 12 title game?
I was not chanting that when I was 9 years old.
No, so you haven't. I mean, kids will do it.
I'd watch that game from my parents' house. So
you didn't break out.
It would be a weird chant in the living room.
We want SC. We want SC.
I don't think people did that back then.
You think that's a new – well, we want Boston has been a thing. We want LA, or that stuff has been around since the 80s. I
just feel like it wasn't a college football thing, but
maybe not. But now it's a thing. We want Bama, and then you get Bama, and then we see how that goes most of the time. And
most of the time.
Well, I'm not talking about Texas last year, Sean. Not everything's about your school.
Oh, well, it started about my school.
Yeah, but not everything. It started that way, but it didn't continue that way. But yeah, I get it. You had a good year. Enough. We understand. You had a great year last year. Still got diced up by Michael Penix, though.
His overall pick.
It happens. It happens.
All the highlights were from that game.
Yeah. He's like, hey, you know why Atlanta took him? Because of what he did against Texas. He had a great night that night. Texas probably would have won it if he had an average night. He just happened to not have it. But I bring it up because late in the Magic-Cavs game, as the Cavs were down big early, and it looked like, oh, you asked for this Magic team, and they pushed you to a game seven, and now look what happened. But they fought back. The Magic's inability to score reared his ugly head again. And Paolo, the counting numbers looked good, but he didn't shoot the ball very well. He got to the free throw line quite a bit, which helped those that point total look pretty good. But Donovan Mitchell took over. He scored 50 in game six, where they couldn't win in Orlando because no team on the road won a game that series. And then he had a big third quarter, continued in the fourth, and the Magic go down to the Cavs. But as that game was ending, the Cavs fans starts chanting, we want Boston. That's the next opponent. We want Boston. We want Boston. Donovan Mitchell's like, hey, quiet down. Hey, stop that. I don't know if it's because he had a teammate at the free throw line or he didn't want them to be taunting Boston. I think if I'm a fan and my star player is like, hey, stop chanting, we want Boston, I'd be a little upset. I don't need that from you. Not in this
right
moment.
Now.
Not right now. You want to, if you're asked about it at the end of the game or in the presser, you're like, you know what, Boston's a great team. It's going to be a tough challenge. I get the fans wanting to be excited.
But respect for those guys and what they've achieved this year.
I appreciate you doing that in the middle of it, in the middle of a presser, but not at the end of the game. I'm going to shoot him some bail and assume it was because one of his guys was at the free throw line and he didn't want any distraction. Although they were up by double digits. They're going to win that game if he missed both free throws. But the whole, hey, quiet down is rough. I'm going to ask, hey, man, I know you're not fully in here. At least that's what people say. But at least give us this. Don't tell us to quiet down when we're chanting we want Boston. You think Jason Tatum and Jaylen Browning will be like, oh, oh. the Cavs fans want us. We're going to play harder. Maybe Jaylen Brown's left hand will be better because the Cavs fans yelled at him about we want Boston. Look, it's a moment. I'm going to shoot him the bail and say that was about free throws. But if it wasn't, if I'm a Cavs fan, I don't feel great about our next opponent.
You know, you don't feel great about the second round?
No.
I mean, I would not be chanting we want Boston.
I wouldn't either.
I would not want Boston.
No, I wouldn't, but they're going to get him.
That's the other thing, is we want Boston.
You are going to get him anyway. It's not like Boston had a game seven later that night, and you're asking for them.
It's not like it's going to the playoff committee.
Yeah, a decision has to be made about Boston. You're going to get him anyway. You didn't have to ask for him. Your team's going to travel there, and then you're going to have two at a minimum in Cleveland. But, yeah.
You're going to have two in Cleveland.
You think they're sweeping? Or you think it's like ends in five or something like that?
Yes.
Okay.
I was not enthused by...
what they did against the Magic?
No.
No, it wasn't. It didn't make me think, oh, they've got a real shot. Let's see how Jared Allen's been hurt the last couple games. We'll see if he's healthy enough to play in that series. We know Kristaps Porzingis won't play, so they're going to be at a disadvantage, at least roster-wise. I mean, they're still going to be favored in that series by quite a bit, but they won't have Kristaps Porzingis. He was supposed to be a bit of a cheat code. The question will be is, depending on when that series ends, can he be available for the back half of that series if it goes more games than Sean thinks it will, or is he just going to be a guy who's available for the conference finals if they get there, which I guess we suspect they do. But, hey guys, don't taunt Big Bad Boston.
I get why you want them. You don't have to play them.
Yeah.
I have to be out here.
I don't got to see Derek White and Drew Holiday and then the wings of Tatum and Brown.
God.
Now I got to hope for Darius Garland stop smoking layups like he was doing all series long.
You know what? Now I'm on Donovan Mitchell's side for quiet down. Guys, please don't. Because, I'm going to have Drew Holiday and Derek White all up in my grill for five games.
Yeah, and if I ask for a switch, the switch will be Tatum or Brown. What am I looking for? I don't want that. I don't want that in my life.
I'm bleep.
Yeah.
You're bleeping me right now.
I got to wait for Darius Garland to throw me a grenade with 4 seconds left on the clock and ask me to do something.
Or they double me, and then I throw the ball to Evan Mobley.
Can't trust him. Max Strus wasn't great until the third quarter. He made some big shots to get the run going as Cleveland took a substantial lead and eventually pulled away. But yeah, that was an interesting series only because at one point you were wondering if any game would be competitive, and they eventually did get competitive, but it kind of played out the way I suspected. I didn't really think Orlando was going to be able to win games on the road, and they're a young team, and Paolo's that dude. But Franz shot the ball poorly. It was Harden-like. I mean, Franz is a young player, so I'm not gonna hit him with that.
Trevor Ariza-like.
Hey, I can't give him Trevor Ariza. Trevor Ariza's a champion, sir.
Also, Trevor Ariza went 0-for-10.
Yeah. Well, it was a bad night. Yes.
He went 1-for-15. You can debate amongst yourselves which one's better, 0-for-10 or 1-for-15. I 1-for-15.
Deion Waiters
didn't lose confidence.
Deion Waiters would say, "Hey, I went 1-for-15, but it's better than going 0-for-10 because I didn't stop shooting.
I kept shooting.
Yeah, you didn't. That rim didn't punk me into not shooting anymore.
I'm sure the Orlando Magic are thrilled that he kept shooting.
Look, no one shot the ball well for them yesterday. Someone had to.
Someone shot it better than 1-for-15.
It's true.
Everyone
but,
shot.
But
it
But you
better.
Want look in a playoff first ever playoff series. You want Franz not to be beaten down by shooting the ball poorly because they expect him to be a major part of that team going forward. He's got to put up shots.
Going 1-for-15 is better than going Ben Simmons mode.
Yes, yes. Going Tobias and going 0-for-2. Yes. Paolo, 10-for-28. Like I said, didn't shoot the ball well, but did get to the free throw line quite a bit. And to keep them in the game, they had a great start. And they couldn't sustain it. They were big, and then we saw Cleveland kind of chase them down in the second quarter and then eventually got to the third where Cleveland had their big quarter. Got some separation, eventually one kind of going away. So Cleveland versus Celtics. Tonight we have Indiana versus New York, the first game of that series, and then we have the second game of Minnesota against Denver. Minnesota goes in there in game one. Anthony Edwards is great. The trash-talking between him and Jamal Murray got going. I imagine that'll continue. He was outstanding. The Jordan stuff, everyone wants to find their next Jordan. I get it, but you know what? Just let him play and just watch him play and watch how great he is. And And because you know at some point when he falls short of being Jordan, then we're going to say he's not Michael Jordan. Yeah, well, no one asked you to compare him to Michael Jordan in the first place. This is your fault. Now that he's not Michael Jordan, now it's a problem for Anthony Edwards instead of just letting him be Anthony Edwards.
Yeah, it was a fun, like, internet joke when he was 20.
Yeah, when they put the side-by-side face thing. Yeah. And, yeah, that's fun.
When he dunks on Yuta Watanabe or something, and or he makes, you know, a couple mid-range jumpers against, on Team USA against Latvia.
Sure.
That's fun. But then, Ted, like, now we're actually doing this with Michael Jordan?
Yes.
We're actually doing this?
And if people could avoid the, well, he's not Mike. He didn't say he was. He hasn't candled himself like he wants to be Michael Jordan. This is on you guys, and now it's his fault because he's not Michael Jordan. Because you know inevitably, if Denver comes back or if it takes a couple years for, you know, the 22-year-old to ascend to a level where he's winning NBA titles, you're going to blame him for your own assertion of what you think he is. When all he wants to do is play ball, and everyone wants to put face of the league on him. And I don't know if Anthony Edwards wants to be the face of the league. It may be something people ordain him with, even though he may just want to go play ball. But you know what? Enjoy what you're watching. Enjoy a great player ascending to the status where he's a clear number one on a title contender. And go, you know what? He went into Denver in game one, a place where they rarely lose, and was the best player on the floor with probably a three-time MVP candidate MVP winner when the end-of-season awards for that come out. I mean, some of them have already come out. Imagine whenever they release the name of the winner for the MVP, Jokic will be that guy. He went in there and was better than him. He was better than the guy who's been the most clutch player in the playoffs so far, in Jamal Murray. Just enjoy that. Oh, he's Jordan. Okay. Gilbert's calling in. He doesn't want to talk with the Astros.
It's not that Gilbert.
Oh, it's a different Gilbert.
Yeah.
Okay. So he may
just happens to be a person named Gilbert.
The other Gilbert. I don't know if we have the other Gilbert, then we have Gilbert. This may be a different Gilbert altogether, or someone pretending to be Gilbert, because this is what that show is about. This is what this show is about. Excuse me. Somebody calling in and pretending to be someone else. Longhorn Keith, I see you. Gilbert, if that is your real name, I see you. We're due for a break. We'll be back.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Del Olalea.
Welcome back. I see the callers. We'll get to you here. If you want to discuss anything, certainly you can call in 713-780-3776. And Keith, if you're out there, the real one, I mean, I think you've called like a couple times already to the morning show, so maybe you take the rest of the day off. I'm not sure about your calling frequency, but a lot of James Harden stuff from you, and all of a sudden, quiet. Imagine that. James Harden not coming through when it matters most as the Mavs take out the Clippers in very Clipper-like fashion. But that happened over the weekend as well. The Mavs move on. They'll see the Thunder. So we've got good matchups in the playoffs. And I'm excited about the way these turn out, or at least I'm excited to see how they turn out. I've got my thoughts on the favorites and who I think are going to win. I don't think it'll be chalk. I think we're going to have at least one upset, and we might get to that a little bit later. But first, let's go with Longhorn Keith. He wants to talk college football. What's up, Longhorn Keith?
Hey, good morning, Dale. Congratulations on the show. I listen every day, but I don't call in because obviously it's not college football season.
Understood.
So, but I did want to talk about this. Look, man, I am obviously this On Three report. We've got to stop these sports writers or these guys who sit behind a desk. This sensation or the idea of trying to promote Quinn Ewers to be the quarterback that he has not proven anybody to be is absolutely insane. Listen, Quinn Ewers is good. He is not worthy of even putting a conversation. And then you've got a redshirt freshman backup, and you say that's the best quarterback room in the country. Guys, we got to That is ridiculous. I mean, I was actually, listen, I've seen them play. I've seen Quinn Ewers play. And I think you know how I feel about Quinn Ewers. He hasn't done anything to prove to me that he's still made any improvements in reading defenses. That guy sucks at reading defenses. And his long balls, with all the talent he had at wide receiver, still is not there. So for people to act as though because he has the name Quinn Ewers or because Arch Manning is in the building, it's absolutely ridiculous and it needs to stop. You'll see in this coming season, and don't get me wrong, I'm not praying on his downfall because I want our team to win. But at the end of the day, I'm not going to act like all of a sudden Quinn Ewers went to sleep and woke up with a better accuracy or a better way to read defenses. Just look at him. And John hit it on the head when he talked about Arch Manning and how long it took him to release the football at times at spring game. I mean, you just pay attention. That's all you got to do. But this idea with the media pumping up these two quarterbacks, it's absurd to me. And I know a lot of our fans and a lot of alum will go crazy about how could you say this about your school. It's the facts, guys. And you have to address the facts. And Quinn Ewers has been in the media since he was a sophomore in high school. 0-3 would write stuff about him. And everybody's bought into this stuff about his arm talent. Yet that guy has not done anything to make me go, oh, yeah, he's worthy of that. I'm sorry, I can't do it.
I appreciate it, Keith. You got a kindred spirit here with Sean. And I don't really understand it either. Quinn Ewers is a fine college quarterback. But other than that, That's where I stop. I don't go, he's great. I don't think he should be part of the best quarterback room in the country. The Arch Manning stuff, beyond the fact that the spring game may have showed that Texas DBs can't run, but the other thing is maybe he was a little slow as far as processing. I need to see that kid in the fire when it matters before I start ranking quarterback rooms. And if Quinn Ewers is your starting quarterback, how are you the number one quarterback room?
That's the funniest thing with the quarterback room rankings is that shouldn't it just be a ranking of the starting quarterbacks? Because in college football, it's not like the NFL where we've seen the backups play. For the most part in college football, if you're a backup, it's because either we haven't seen you play, Arch Manning, or we've seen you play and that's why you're a backup. Like there's not these like, you know, the Jacoby Brissett's of college football. There's not like this
Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Gardner Minshew. Like there's not these like good backup quarterbacks.
We have no idea. All you can lean on is their projection. They're talented coming out of high school, but we don't know anything about them. At least we've seen Arch on the field, but these other guys, like, we don't know anything about the Notre Dame quarterback room. They apparently wasn't strong enough. They had to go get Riley Leonard from Duke. So what does that say about the other guys? How good could they have been if they had to go reach into Duke to go grab a guy? Now, Riley Leonard's fine. I know Daniel Jones. Duke has produced some talent. But Riley Leonard wasn't a great quarterback at Duke. He's been injury prone last year, too. He's a, once again, another fine college quarterback. But to rank a quarterback room based off of him as a top six quarterback room, and then look at C.J. Carr and Steve Angeli. I'm mentioning names you've never heard of. They're just the underclassmen at Notre Dame. And say, that's a great quarterback room? We never know. You never know. I would think the assumption, or you would assume, hey, Notre Dame didn't think their quarterback room was good enough. That's why they went and got Riley Leonard. So we can't just assume the other two guys are pretty good. It doesn't make any sense.
We're also, I mean, part of it is also the available options in college football where there's not the like Caleb Williams coming back. There's not the like absolute no doubt about it. This guy is the best quarterback in college football because, you know, is it Shedeur Sanders? Is it Carson Beck? Is it Quinn Ewers? Is it Riley Leonard? Like there's no Cam Ward. There's no like no doubt about it. Like you feel good about like saying it with your chest about who the best quarterback in college football is.
Yeah, right? If we're ranking him, Oregon's number three, why wouldn't Dylan Gabriel, backed up by Dante Moore, be your best quarterback room? Dante Moore throws a lot of pick sixes. He did that last year at UCLA. He went to Oregon because he wanted to not sit a year, but learn and maybe not have the pressure being a starter. If we're talking about guys we've seen play and we know have some talent and can least play a little bit on the college level. Why wouldn't Oregon be number one when they took two transfers? We know they both can at least play at the college level. Why wouldn't they be number one? I don't know. Maybe we know people, at least message board conspiracy theories is. We name this particular article was written because of the clicks. You know who cares a lot about college football? Texas people. And Texas people will read this article, so we name them number one, so they'll go read it. That's some of the message board conspiracy stuff when we talk about articles sometimes when we think they don't make any sense, or that's true or not. You know, the people who run these sites will push back on that stuff, or they'd be how they rank their players. Oh, this Texas recruit, let's give him a four-star because Texas people will flock to the site and read up on him. All that stuff, you can decide if that's true or not. I just don't understand a lot of it, particularly if we stick with – I don't want to just rip on Quinn Ewers. He's fine. He's a good quarterback on the college level. Should he be part of the number one quarterback room? Probably not. You go look at Georgia. Carson Beck, if you like him, great. Also, Jaden Rashada, who transferred to Georgia. We know he can play a little bit at Arizona State. So I would rank Oregon and Georgia, one or two, however you decide it, because we've seen these two quarterbacks play. We've seen the backup play, and we know, at least on some level, they're talented.
Or even like Ohio State, where you have Will Howard, who's not – yeah, Will Howard's good. Like, he's another one of those – he's a good college quarterback. But then they have like four and five-star backups backing him up, where it's like, you know what, just taking a shot in the dark, I'm going to guess one of them can play. I'm going to guess one of them. I don't know which one, but one of the, like, Devin Brown.
Julian Sayen,
Aaron Nolan. Yeah, like, one of these guys can
play.
That's
what they're doing. They're ranking. Well, if you want to tell me the most talented quarterback room, cool. But as far as who I want going out there to win me a game, I'd go pick two. I pick a quarterback room where I've seen two guys play.
But even then, like, if I want to go out and win a game, I want one quarterback. I don't want a quarterback room. I want one quarterback.
It's true, because why should I assume a quarterback is going to get hurt and then the backup has to play? Yeah, you want the best quarterback available and go, that's the guy I want. Understood.
It makes sense for receivers, for running backs, for offensive line, defensive line, linebackers, defensive backs. That makes sense to do the unit rankings. Quarterback with literally only one plays at a time. And if one doesn't play, that means something pretty bad happened. Either he got hurt or stinks. Like, what? Yeah.
And he's probably stunk so much that you're out of the game anyway.
Yeah.
And maybe not. It doesn't happen all the time, but that you can probably assume if before a starting quarterback gets pulled, he's got to be really bad and your team's got to be down. And so it's an article for the offseason.
Yeah, and the fact that I'm looking at it now, it's SEC, Big Ten, Big Ten, SEC, SEC, Notre Dame, SEC, 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 SEC.
Yeah, did they even really try?
like,
is there a quarterback room in the Mountain West that's better? I don't know, but I doubt.
In one,
but they like, doubt they tried to look for it.
An ACC team, a Big 12 team.
No, we'll make Notre Dame because they took an ACC quarterback, but we won't look into the ACC and see. Yeah, the Big 12, no, nobody. Nobody? Yeah,
come on. Cam Ward isn't good enough to crack this list. Florida's on this list.
A&M's in the top 10.
Florida and A&M are the last
Connor
two.
Wegman, fine, but why? What?
Graham Mertz or Cam Ward?
Taking Cam Ward pretty easily in that one. And then Miami went and brought in, like, he's got a funny last name, Reese Poffenbarger, whatever his last name is.
Baller.
From Albany. He was a good player at Albany. Now it's funny, Miami secured him. I don't know what they promised him. And then, hey, we're going to go get Cam Ward, too. So that kid, he'll probably sit out for a year, and then if Cam Ward plays all the games, if you're a Miami fan, you hope that's the case, and then Reese Poffenbarger will compete for the number one job next year as he keeps his red shirt. But, yeah, mix it up. SEC, Notre Dame, and then the Big Ten.
And SEC, it's five of them are SEC teams. The other ones are Notre Dame, Ohio State, Oregon.
And Oregon's in the Big Ten. Yeah, with Ohio State. So, yeah, it was it's pretty low. It's pretty loaded to the Power Two. If now people are calling those two conferences the Power Two, and then you throw in Notre Dame as well, who I can't believe Riley Leonard got them up that high. I've seen Riley Leonard play. He's fine.
That's most of this list, though, are quarterbacks that are good to find.
Maybe it speaks to the level or lack thereof of talent.
Yeah, there's no Drake May. Yeah. There's no J.J. McCarthy. There's no these certified ballers.
Guys, well, Drake May, relax.
and J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah, relax on both of those. At least J.J. McCarthy won a national title with a lot of help. Drake May is getting his ass kicked by NC State.
With no help.
Well, he was part of the problem. I think the rest of North Carolina are saying, hey, we didn't have any help. Our quarterback stunk in that game.
That's what Tez Walker said.
Yeah, that's what, hey, if Drake would have shown up to play, maybe I'm a higher draft pick. The other Gilbert or Gilbert, whatever you go by, if you want to call back in about the Astros, you can do that. Longhorn Keith called in about college football, and considering the two people who are on the show, that's going to take up a segment. But you can call in about anything, 713-780-3776. And I say anything because if this shows any proof, anything kind of goes, except for that Southern accent that happened last week. That doesn't go. But we will.
No, sir.
No. Mr. Dell, no, that doesn't go. That was crazy that came up last week. That doesn't go. And neither does the Julian stuff either, unless he's talking about TV. So we will continue to discuss things of a nonsensical nature, but we'll also talk some sports. So we got coaching news as far as an extension, which I found funny considering this guy was still coaching and people were discussing his job status with another team. So we'll talk about that and other stuff when we come back.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.